Okay, this is the interactive hour and the hour for whistleblowers to join us with Linda Moulton Howe. We'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda. So what are you working on these days? You're everywhere.
Yes, and it feels like that too, that every day, I think it feels faster, more subjects coming that I would like to travel 100 places and be able to report firsthand, and that's how fast this world keeps breaking news.
Well, that's true, too. Lots going on this planet. I mean, absolutely incredible, from the NSA to the signals you just reported on. I mean, it's a fascinating time to be around, isn't it?
And dangerous.
I think that
National Security Agency, the fact that there was an effort on the part of some people in Congress to do this vote this week to try to curtail the money for all of their expansion is a sign that at least something is shifting in the United States about how much do we want to be a police state.
Well, drones in the air. Now they announced today that they have gone after internet servers and companies wanting passwords to email accounts and things like that. I mean, it doesn't end.
And if it isn't stopped, if this sort of mindless totalitarian psychology that is dished out to us as necessary in order to, quote unquote, fight terrorism, we will have lost the United States of America as it was originally conceived. And what is amazing to me is how this echoes what happened in Germany.
Yes.
Several decades ago, Jim Mars has written about exactly this, that we are falling down that very slippery slope of exactly what happened in Germany is happening in the United States if we don't put a stop to it now.
You know what? People laughed at us 8 years ago when we talked about the Illuminati and organizations like that who wanted to push for this one world government. And they're not laughing anymore, Linda.
Right. Because now it's in everybody's face and backyard, literally.
To the phones now we go with Linda Moulton Howe. We've got an hour of what we call conversations with Linda. Greg is in Jacksonville, Florida. You can get us started, Gregory. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, George. Good morning, Linda.
Hi.
First off, if you're not married, I am looking for a good adventure.
There you go. There's your radio proposal, Linda.
I'm not looking for anything like that. Thank you.
Why don't you tell them there's a line? There's a line to 90 guys who want to date.
Yeah, they probably are. All right, my question. During these crop circles over there in England and stuff, has there been reported any mutilations during the time or around the areas when these crop circles are discovered?
Only one that I know of that goes back to the early 90s. It was a horse mutilation very near one of the Wiltshire patterns. And there were a lot of strange pieces to that. I never was able to successfully understand the timeline. Timelines are so important. If the mutilation occurred X days, let's say, before crop formation or X days after, you can't say that one or the other is linked. We run into this problem in so many investigations. And it's just one of those pieces that always nagged at me is why was there a bloodless, trackless mutilation of a horse right in the area of where there was a crop formation? But again, that doesn't link them together. It just says that the phenomena of the animal mutilations has been going on this planet for, as far as I know, for at least a century, and that the modus operandi is, in the classic cases, is always without blood, is usually without tracks around the animal's body, and that becomes explained by the few eyewitnesses who have seen animals rise in beams of light into something in the sky that is glowing, or they have seen animals lowered in beams of light to the ground. That is a technology that, as far as I know, even today in 2013, after 60 years of policies of denial by our government, the UK government, and our World War II colleagues, that no, I'm going to just put it this way, no terrestrial human military or government, I think, does not have a beam technology that can lift a 2,000-pound bull up in a beam of light. So assuming that all of the law enforcement who told me so long ago in 1979, September, when I first started my very first investigation, that the perpetrators, these were their words, this was what I was told by sheriffs and deputies, the perpetrators of animal mutilations are creatures from outer space, quote, close quote. That's the way it was put to me. And for people who might be hearing those words for the first time, you probably feel the way I did back in September of 79. It was a shock, and I felt like Alice in Wonderland going through the mirror. But now, by 2013, thousands and thousands of miles, literally, that I have walked trying to understand all of this, the idea that there are other intelligences out there using not just this planet, but many planets for harvesting of genetic material, of collecting minerals, of doing what we do on our planet as nations, that there would be, as Michio Kaku would say, advanced civilizations in the universe that can move galaxy to galaxy and control suns, that they would be harvesting material from planets for reasons that are incomprehensible to us. And once you begin to think in those terms, I've never really felt much fear about it. I think that we are in some sort of a strange transition period in which our own humanity, governments, and military made decisions a long time ago to keep everybody in the dark in order to keep, quote-unquote, the status quo, which is that is defined as being security. From my point of view, and I think a lot of people feel this way now, you don't have any security if you have governments that are basically marauding all of your rights and telling you lies and saying that policies of denial justify keeping something as fundamental as we're not alone in this universe and never have been, from a planet just to keep the planet in a status quo. So maybe, George, part of all of the chaos and the rapidity with which each day it seems like more and more breaking news is emerging is that we are at some sort of a transition, that all of these policies of denial cannot last, and that just like finally, we understand how pervasive the National Security Agency, CIA, and all of the alphabet soup have been in all of our lives without our knowing it, that consciousness now makes us stronger. It does not make us weaker. And that is my fundamental point on all of us deserve to know what our so-called governments know about other life in the universe interacting with this planet. And so I hope my work contributes to helping reach that goal.
Linda, you were at the Citizens Disclosure hearing that Stephen Bassett put on several months ago. You're on YouTube. What was the thrust of your presentation?
I did five, I think, at a night program. They asked me to do a presentation on scientific evidence on animal mutilations, which I did. I also did presentations on a variety of various facets that have to do with cases or firsthand information that I have had from people in military or intelligence with firsthand knowledge about what our government has done in terms of back engineering, collecting bodies. It's all true. It's not fantasy. It's not mythology. It's real. And that, as one man told me a long time ago, he said that he had seen one of the underground installations where our government has what he called a museum of non-human bodies and technologies.
Next up, let's go to first-time caller Lee in Philadelphia. Welcome to the program. Hi, Lee. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for answering.
You are welcome.
First, I want to say how much I love you and the show and Miss Moulton Howell.
Thank you.
I know the other guy proposed to you. I just think you're fascinating. Your in-depth reports, your beauty, your everything. You're just amazing.
Thank you.
George Norrie, you're just the greatest, man. Wow. I love it. Listening to the show. I usually listen to it on YouTube. Some fluke of the universe, I actually managed to get it on the radio tonight.
Well, how about that? There's a reason you're on.
Yeah, I live in the middle of nowhere. This is Philadelphia, Mississippi, and I live in the middle of nowhere. And I usually can't get your show in, but tonight I was able to get it in. You guys are great. The deal about the NSA.
Right.
They passed a law here in Mississippi yesterday saying that the NSA cannot intervene with our phone calls, can't listen in on our phone calls and the internet and all that, which I find comical because you know they're going to do what they want to do.
That's right, they are.
I only got in on the last part of the interview with you, Ms. Howe, about the comet, and this isn't really a question, but something to look to. If it falls apart when it goes past the sun, where are the pieces going to go?
Uh-huh. Oh, they will continue back in a trajectory. Anything that goes in an orbit around the sun is on a trajectory. It has to do with the physics of this universe. So the comet is coming in. It has an orbit. It has an inertial energy in that orbit. And no matter what happens in this at the sun or near the sun, if there are pieces left over, they will just continue going in what would have been the path if the comet had stayed together, and they will go back out to the Oort cloud from where they came. Mm-hmm. If they survive, it's very possible this comet is getting so close, and it's only 1 kilometer in diameter. As Dr. Hibbett said, it's hard to imagine that the 2 Russian scientists were able to see that flare-up around the Jupiter orbit, that the comet has been in such a deep freeze for millions of years, billion maybe, that it would warm up enough at Jupiter to flare up, to end up on a photograph. And because they don't know how much carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, water, and other volatiles are in this comet, this is a guessing game about, as it gets warmer and warmer, will this comet, this primordial, sort of virgin ice coming into the solar system so close to the sun, will it really start to boil off, and that there may be a really bright flare? That's the issue about, could it get as bright as the full moon? But in that process of boiling off, it literally could evaporate into nothing.
I think one of Lee's concerns, Linda, was maybe some junk would hit the planet and wipe us out like an asteroid.
Well, that's what I'm trying to stress, is that there are trajectory orbits. And we're in a universe that has laws of physics. And there is not going to be something that is near the sun on a trajectory that is going back out to the Oort cloud that is going to have any way to affect us. The closest, try to absorb this, the closest that comet I saw will come to the Earth is, I think it was 40 million miles.
Well, that's far enough for me, huh?
Yeah.
Next up, we go to Drew in Arkansas. Hello, Drew. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
I have a little story that I want to tell about my experience with a crop circle.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this was many years ago. I was a lot younger, a lot healthier back then. And I used to work on a farm as a farmhand. What happened was, we go out really early in the morning to harvest, and while I was out there, we were driving the harvester, I saw these several rings in the field, And so I stopped because I thought that some hooligan had taken his truck and decided to do donuts in the field. But then I didn't see any tracks. And I thought this was weird. So I called over my supervisor, and he called over the head of the farm. And the head of the farm started to panic a little bit. And he said, oh, I want you to drive over this and never speak of it again. He said, last thing I want are the suits coming in and tearing up everything and tinfoil hats thinking that I got aliens and they're camping out. But I do remember what the circle looked like, and I'm not intelligent enough to figure it out, but maybe you might be able to. Is it okay if I describe it?
Sure.
It was several rings. It was about five or six rings, and they were in perfect circles. But rather than each ring, each ring was smaller than each other, but they weren't all directly in the center like a bullseye. Instead, they all touched a single point on the edge. They, like I said, they were perfect circles, but they seemed to be staggered towards the edge. So all of them hit a single point. And I don't know if that means anything.
Do you think you could sketch it for me and email me as an attachment?
I really wouldn't want to. I have arthritis in my hand, and it's not very good. But it was five. If you imagine the ring, each ring touching a single point of all the rings. Like, you draw a circle, then you draw another circle inside of that one, and then another circle inside of that one, and they all touch the same point on the sheet of paper.
Well, if you could get somebody to help you sketch it as what you saw, you could email it to me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com, and I'd be very interested in what you did see. And would you tell me again, where exactly was that geographically and what date?
I think he hung up. I don't know where he went.
Well, it just shows you that there are people out there who have had
There he is. I found him.
Okay.
Go ahead. Drew, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead.
What was the exact location and what date?
I can't remember the exact date, but the year was 1974. And I hope you do appreciate the respect, but I would prefer not to say the exact farm it was on.
No, town.
It was, excuse me?
What town and state?
It was in Maryland, and it was just outside of a place called Sandtown. Sandtown.
All right, Linda, we're going to run out of time here, so I'm going to hit this break, and we're going to come back with more. And again, just email Linda any information you have at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. The rest of you on hold, just hang there. We'll get right to you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast on our next Coast to Coast program. John B. Wells sitting in for me while I go off on assignment. I'll be back, of course, on Monday for you on Coast to Coast AM. Let's come back in a moment and take final calls with Linda right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Linda Moulton Howe with us. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls in our final segment right here. Speeches, events coming up for you, Linda.
I will be in Pittsburgh in the first week in November to do a presentation I think is important, tying Göbekli Tepe into this whole idea of a planet that's been terraformed from some information that I have leaked. So I will be doing that. In between, I'm trying to concentrate on several things I'm working on, both writing and television and radio. And one subject that I think that is beginning to, in my mind, rise higher and higher on the radar every day is what is happening in Fukushima. I have in the last week, I tried to find somebody there on the ground who would speak enough English that we could understand, who has also been investigating a couple of independent reporters about the high cesium-137, 134, tritium levels, what might be going out into the ocean. And the most recent dangerous issue is, why is there steam coming from Unit 3? And I heard today on NPR that there was one reporter who heard it might be rain falling on still a very hot 104 degrees Fahrenheit surface of Unit 3. But there are other people saying that it may be that the there might be a nuclear reaction trying to get started again. And so the whole thing is horrible, and we can't get a reality check from TEPCO or the Japanese government. So that, to me, is a big story we all should be paying more attention to.
Okay, back to the calls. Steve in San Diego. Go ahead, Stephen.
George, happy 63 to you and me.
Thank you, Stephen. You too.
Their favorite sister here. Yes, I wanted to mention, I think she hit the nail on the head with the diatonic scale, the musical thing.
Yeah.
It's about the frequency. When I was quite young, my father pulled me aside, and he knew I was a math genius. He told me that the most pure and simple mathematic scale in the universe was music, and we have hit that. And if I could make a reference to George, you in particular, if you could listen to the Moody Blues song about the word that is the frequency. It's like the middle C of the world.
And the frequency does work. Does work indeed. Linda, are you still getting whistleblower contacts? Are they calling you?
Yes, I do get leaks on various subjects, and until I get them developed, I don't talk about them. But it's very valuable, and I really appreciate your putting out that request to the Coast audience. If there are people on a number of subjects that I have covered, everything from the Dark Pyramid up near the Mount McKinley area in Alaska to military and government intel, that where there are people who have firsthand knowledge about the whole non-human interaction. There are many areas where getting somebody who has firsthand knowledge that they can prove with a paper trail that they are who they are and that they've done the work that they're describing that relates to my trying to bring to bear the pressure of fact on these very difficult subjects, made even more difficult when you have a government that has chosen a policy of denial, allegedly in the interest of national security, and that's what I'm up against, and others are all the time.
We go to Rick in New York. Welcome to the program, Rick.
Yeah, hi, George. Hi, Linda. Listen, I got a quick question for you. I was wondering if either one of you know the vote that took place in the House of Representatives today?
Yeah.
Okay.
On
you
the
know
NSA.
Those votes were tabulated? Whether it was by machine or it was actually a physical count?
I think they do it by machine.
Then it's definitely a fix. I just don't buy it. This country is so far gone, I'm almost wondering whether it's beyond help, George.
Yeah, don't give up
because ask yourself, I mean, the vote was for, actually, if you state it another way, the vote was for permission to continue spying on private citizens that provide no threat to this country. That's what the vote was for. And you're telling me a majority of the representatives that is supposed to represent us voted for that? I don't buy it. And it was the way
217
was, something like 205 to 270, just close enough so that people might trust
it. It was even closer.
I just don't buy it. Either that or they're all on the take, and we got to get rid of all of them.
I think it was 217 to 205. That was pretty close, huh? Pretty close indeed. The bottom line here, though, Linda, tragedy that they keep passing these things and getting them done.
Well, I think that for a lot of us who have grown up in the United States before 9/11, that the change And the no asking questions about a government that is turning into a marauding, it's marauding. There's no other word for it, because the American citizenry is now put in the category of a potential enemy at every level, from airports to everything that's happening. If the government says that they must spy on every single person in every conceivable way in order to protect this nation from terrorists,
that's crazy.
That, this is 1984 newspeak. And the fact that anybody, anywhere, whether or not they are representing us, allegedly representing us in Washington or not, who would buy such phony, upside-down, bass-ackwards logic just astonishes me. I do not understand why everyone in Congress is not saying this has to be stopped.
I know. It's amazing that these things get passed and by majority. It's crazy. George in Charleston, West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hello, George. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking my call. I saw something in the sky about around the turn of the century, and I'm just curious to find out if anyone else has called in and said anything about it, because it drives me crazy to think I was the only one. And when you try to tell somebody something about it, they think you're nuts. That around the turn of the century, I was in California, and I walked out onto the deck. And I had a cup of coffee with me, and I put my foot up on the rail, and I looked up in the sky, and there was a contrail, or whatever they call that, chemical trail from an airplane. Anyhow, I just glanced forward of it and to see what kind of plane it was. And just above the plane, it looked like the moon was falling. I was shocked at what I saw, and I looked at it for several seconds, and I realized that it was stationary. It wasn't moving, and I realized it was not the moon. It looked metallic. It was sort of a golden color, like sand almost, and it wasn't a bright light or anything. It was like the Earth. It had a two sections to it, a top part and a bottom part that was outstanding. It looked like slate that was stacked on top of each other, and as it got, it was big at the bottom and small at the top, like it was in layers. And there was two sections of it, a square one on the top side, and on the bottom side, it looked like in the shape of a chicken leg turned upside down. And I had the sense to look and see if I could see like an atmosphere around it. And there was sort of a little blue ring, was just paper thin, around about half of it. And on the right-hand side, I couldn't see any, but on the left-hand side, I did. And my mind was going crazy. I didn't know what to do. And I had my camera inside the room. I went back inside the room, got my camera, come out, and it was gone.
Gone. Ah.
And so I hoped that I wasn't the only one that ever saw something like that, and I was wondering if anyone had ever called you.
Could I ask you a question? Do you mean that this glowing object was next to or above or right behind the plane that was creating the contrail?
Yes, it was above the plane. The plane went right in front of it. And it wasn't glowing. It was like if you was looking at a mountain, that it was like Earth. It wasn't a bright light or anything like that. It looked like a planet, but it wasn't. It was metallic.
Well, I have not heard anything quite like what you're describing, but I do remember that Art Bell and I did a whole bunch of shows about what was happening with the contrails in the around 95, 96, I think is when it started. And we received videos. I think there were four or five. They were videos that showed an object that seemed to be silver or white and seemed to be oval or round, either in the contrail or moving in and around the contrail or moving in and around the strange silver large plane that had an orange tail. I'd never seen that before. And the question was, well, what are these unidentified objects that are moving in and around this contrail while it's being formed by a plane that is we couldn't identify? And one of my great frustrations, I really worked hard trying to come up with any kind of hard evidence in a paper trail that would tie a government agency directly to the contrails for whatever were the reason. And I have never been able to do that. The closest I got was Edward Teller doing a presentation about 5 years before he died in Italy with two other scientists from UC Berkeley. And the whole essence of their presentation was a proposal, a hypothesis that global warming could be, curtailed maybe is the best verb, not stopped,
slowed down.
Check by putting metal out into the atmosphere in small particles and deflecting photons back.
Did you hear, Linda, where they're stopping HAARP because of lack of funding?
I was told in 2007-08 by Michael Kelly, the ionospheric physicist at Dartmouth, that this was canceled.
Yeah.
Back then.
Let's go to Hugh in Grants Pass, Oregon. Wildcard line. Hugh, go ahead.
Hi, George. I'm the guy that's been abducted by reptilians and operated on. No proposal for me, Ms. Howe. I salute your intelligence. What's happening now is I've been abducted since 1953 by a government agency. It's now coming to the forefront. I called to ask you.
Abducted by the government. Why?
I left you an email and my phone number this morning or last night. I'll wait for you to get back to me. There's too much involved, Linda.
Okay.
Get a hold of me. My name is Hugh. George knows me. I'll be calling George in a few days. My wife died under strange circumstances. After her death, I had another reptilian occurrence, and my home was attacked constantly for quite a long time. I couldn't hold out there any longer, and I contacted a friend out here by Mount Shasta. And I moved out to the Grants Pass area.
Is it better for you there?
Yeah. Yes, George, and I've been enlightened. I have some photos you need to get for me.
Okay. Well, definitely, Linda, take a look at your email. I know you get swamped every time you're on the program.
Right. Okay.
In there somewhere. And then, Hugh, we look forward to talking to you in a few days or so. Next week, obviously.
All right.
We're already at the end of the week. Let's go to Karen in Ashland, Oregon as well, west of the Rockies. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I have the gentleman that was speaking about chemtrails. I have seen that. I saw it first about 10 years ago in Sierra Madre, California, and it was making their regular designs. It was very early in the morning. It was dawn, and I couldn't believe no one, I was in my car, no one around me could see a very large, best way to describe it is a balloon. At that time, it was pink, and it just sort of opened and dissipated. And then I was walking here in Oregon a few weeks ago, and I saw one that was more of a metallic shape. And again, I looked around to see if anyone, in the area saw what I was seeing. It's very thick, heavy chemtrails here in Oregon, in Ashland. And I looked up and watched it. I just stood and watched. And again, it's sort of, this time, It opened from the bottom. It kind of has a life to it, but I put that to the wind. I just thought that's probably the wind. And it's almost like a granule granular sand type feeling when it opens.
Have you ever tried to videotape or photograph it?
No, I wasn't near a camera both times, but I have found very precisely cut aluminum, almost like linguine, mm-hmm. except extremely thin particles on the ground, in my hair.
Well, have you collected some? I would love to see them and see what I could do in terms of learning more.
I have them in a very secret place. I will check on them.
Okay.
I would be happy to send them to you.
See if you could share one or two with me.
Okay. In fact, I'll go see if I can find some more out there.
Could you get it analyzed, Linda?
It depends on what it is, and is there anything that we could tie it back to, but until I have it to see what we could learn, it's hard to know. That's why it would be valuable, I think, to try to analyze some of it.
Are your books still available for folks?
My books have always been available. They have come over a period of time, An Alien Harvest in 1989, followed by Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1 in 94, Glimpses, Volume 2, High Strangeness in 1998, and the second updated edition of Mysterious Lights and Crop Circles in 2002. And those are very large books. Yeah, the first three, each one is about 400 and some pages, 8.5 by 11, so that I could have hundreds of documents and images throughout. And those books have always been available. And for people who are interested in my work, you just always can go to earthfiles.com and click on the Earth Files shop, and two of my documentaries and my four books are always there available. They always have been, and they always will be.
Super. Linda, thanks. We'll talk to you again next month. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safer.